to the book of Job, chapter 6. Job, chapter 6, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. But Job answered and said, "Oh, that my grief were throughly weighed, and my calamity laid in the balances together. For now it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words are swallowed up. For the arrows of the Almighty are within me, the poison whereof drinketh up my spirit. The terrors of God do set themselves in array against me. Doth the wild ass bray when he hath grass? Or loweth the ox over his fodder? Can that which is unsavory be eaten without salt? Or is there any taste in the white of an egg? The things that my soul refused to touch are as my sorrowful meat. Oh, that I might have my request, and that God would grant me the thing that I long for, even that it would please God to destroy me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. Then should I yet have comfort. Yea, I would harden myself in sorrow. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. What is my strength that I should hope? And what is mine end that I should prolong my life? Is my strength the strength of stones? Or is my flesh of brass? Is not my help in me, and is wisdom driven quite from me? To him that is afflicted, pity should be showed from his friend, but he forsaketh the fear of the Almighty. My brethren have dealt deceitfully as a brook, and as the stream of brooks they pass away, which are blackish by reason of the ice, and wherein the snow is hid. What time they wax warm, they vanish. When it is hot, they are consumed out of their place. The paths of their way are turned aside. They go to nothing and perish. The troops of Tema looked. The companies of Sheba waited for them. They were confounded because they had hoped. They came thither and were ashamed. For now ye are nothing. Ye see my casting down and are afraid. Did I say, bring unto me, or give a reward for me of your substance? Or deliver me from the enemy's hand, or redeem me from the hand of the mighty? Teach me, and I will hold my tongue, and cause me to understand wherein I have erred. How forcible are right words, but what doth your arguing reprove? Do ye imagine to reprove words and the speeches of one that is desperate, which are as wind? Yea, ye overwhelm the fatherless, and ye dig a pit for your friend. Now, therefore, be content. Look upon me, for it is evident to you unto you if I lie. Return, I pray you. Let it not be iniquity. Yea, return again. My righteousness is in it. Is there iniquity in my tongue? Cannot my taste discern perverse things? May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. So in this sixth chapter, then, remember what we had in chapters 1 and 2. We had those two scenes when Satan appears before the Lord. The Lord in both of those instances gives him leave to strike Job, in the first in his family and goods, and the second in his body. Then in chapter 3, we have Job. In chapter 3, we have Job crying out. Job opened his mouth and cursed his day. Then in chapters 4 and 5, Eliphaz the Temanite responded to Job's first outburst. And he responded in a way we saw that was not good. He imputed to Job things that did not belong to him. He called him a hypocrite and so on. And then in all of that, after his speech, then Job will respond now for two chapters, in chapters 6 and 7. So in this first chapter, Job endeavors to correct his friend's misunderstanding of him from what he said in chapter 3, and then their misapplication in chapters 4 and 5. He said, "You do not understand how great my grief is, and you have failed to see the depth of my sorrow." And so he begins with, "Oh, that my sorrows were weighed in a balance, they would be more than the sand of the sea." You are treating me as if this is a light affliction. This is not, in other words. Then he says, do the wild animals cry out when they have what they need? And he gives several examples of that. And then he says, this is the reason why I'm crying out. I don't have what I need. I am afflicted. I'm afflicted, and that affliction is weightier than the sand of the sea as I conceive of it. And so this is why this wild ass is braying, if you will. That's his point in the second section there of the first paragraph. The things that my soul refused to touch are as my sorrowful meat. So your counsel, therefore, is unsavory. It is ineffective. It is as the white of an egg. You have set before me a way of repentance that I cannot go, because you have accused me of things that I have not done. That's the first section, verses 1 through 7. Then verses 8 through 12, Job here expresses a faith in God, and yet perceived in a twisted way. Notice what Job says here, and I'm going to tell you very clearly, and I want you to hear me well, that while we count Job a righteous man, even through his sufferings, he's a righteous man, not because he's a perfect man. He's a righteous man because he is a faithful man. Let's make sure we get that understanding, so that when some things can come out of Job's mouth that should not come out, we are able to call them what they are, and that is grievous sin. This is what Job is about to do here. That's why I wanted to couch it like I did, because he says, notice, even that it would please God to destroy me, that he would let loose his hand and cut me off. Now, I want to make some distinguishing here so that we're not left in confusion. Notice that Job is refusing to take such matters into his own hand. We understand about suicide. It is a sin. It is not a sin that is perhaps what we call unpardonable, but it is a sin. To be shut up under that kind of despair is unchristian, and yet it does not evidence reprobation. Not necessarily. It may. It may not. But notice that Job, even in the depths of his difficulty here, is not willing to go that far. He says, "Oh, that the Lord would cut me off." Right? This reveals to us the depth of his suffering. The depth of his suffering is such that he would rather die. Now, Job, as a man of faith, would rather die because he knows what comes next. He has, in that sense, the sight of his Redeemer in mind. He has, in that sense, the understanding that should he depart, it is to depart and be with Christ, like the Apostle Paul puts it in Philippians chapter 1. But notice that this is an improper wish. This is an improper wish. That these sufferings with which I'm suffering are too great for me. Lord, please take me away. Oh, that the Lord would grant me my desire. So notice that Job, while wishing for death, refuses to take such things into his own hands. But notice also that he is wishing for things he ought not to. He ought rather to strengthen himself for the sake of hope that the Lord would restore him, that the Lord should give him comfort apart from cutting him off. Notice he says that it would please God to destroy me, that he would let loose his hand to cut me off. Then should I yet have comfort. Right? If I knew that this was going to end in the right way, that I was going to be drawn to the grave sometime soon, then I would harden myself. I would grit and bear it, in other words. I would gut it out. Then should I have comfort. Yeah, I would harden myself in sorrow. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One. And then he goes on to say some things that are particularly poignant after that. Notice what he says. Is my strength the strength of stones, or is my flesh of brass? And then that next question, another rhetorical question. Is not my help in me? Now that is a statement of hopelessness that does not belong to a Christian. Is not my help in me? One of his friends should have answered him at that point, no, Job, your help is in the Lord. No, don't say that about yourself, that your help is in only yourself. No, your help is in the Lord. If he casts down, he can also raise up. And so your help is in him. So these are things that we draw from this passage where we see that there is some faith in Job, and yet that his afflictions have turned him in such a way such that he is saying things he ought not to say. All right, so then in verse 14, good counsel to those who had come to speak to him. To him that is afflicted, pity should be showed from his friend, but he forsaketh the fear of the Almighty. He, that is, the friend who did not show him pity, forsaketh the fear of the Almighty. Let's make sure we understand that clearly. That when we go to visit those who are in any kind of affliction, there must be some tenderness with which we come. We don't come as stoics to those who are suffering, demanding stoicism of them. We don't come with a hammer to add to their afflictions, to pile on, as it were. But we may come with instruction, and some of that instruction may have some correction in it. But let us deliver that correction upon the spoon of good oil, right? Let us make sure that we are coming with sympathy to those who are in any kind of need. We heard that already in Romans chapter 12, did we not? All right, so they forsake the fear of God by not pitying Job. They are like a dry brook in the heat and a frozen brook in the cold. They offer no help. Right? So you're thirsty, it's in the winter, you're out in the forest and you come across a brook and there's no water in it, it's frozen. Or it's in the summertime and you're thirsty and you come across that same brook and it's dried up. You're like those brooks that carry no water. You had a promise of help, but truly without none, without any. And then he says, you speak thus out of fear and not out of sound counsel. In other words, you're afraid. You're afraid for me. You're afraid that I have sinned some great sin instead of speaking out of sound counsel. All right, then in verse 22, Job continues his reproof of their counsels. He says, you have come uninvited and you brought foolishness. You have caught at my words rather than rightly ascertaining the difficulty of the matter. You've used my desperate speech against me rather than attempting to sympathize and to draw me into the right way and to comfort me with words of God's care and kindness. And then in the final section, 28 through 30, Job vindicates himself against their charges and counsels them to leave off their iniquity in their counsel. Therefore, be content, look upon me, for it is evident unto you if I lie. In other words, I'm telling you the truth. You have offered me terrible counsel. And so Job justifies himself there. All right, so what do we say to this by way of use? We understand that there's plenty of blame to go around here. There's some blame in Job, and there's some blame in his friends, which is often the case when folks are under affliction. This is a difficult passage. It is a difficult circumstance, and yet we must be wise and rise to such challenges as these with a proper sense of, understanding and sympathy, and yet a proper sense of uprightness and calling to account. And we must learn the art of doing so without reaching snap judgments that are wrong, sitting, hearing, speaking, probing, caring in such a way that our counsels might be heard. Well, let's leave it there then with Job chapter 6, and let's stand.